21, we're going to bring part two of a message we started last week on nations, nations in eternity. Nations in eternity. And we get that after looking at our eternal home. It's described in description. It's pure gold. It's a city of pure gold. Not only streets of gold, but pure gold. The entire city is pure gold, transparent as glass. Wow. And it's got a wall with 12 pearly gates, and it's got 12 foundations of precious stones, gems. We saw the symbolism of them in actual Christian service as they build upon the foundation of Christ. Those stones represented as the church age. The wall and the gates representing Israel and its nation. And we looked at the size of it. We looked at the description of it. But still yet, eye has not seen, ear has not heard of the things that God hath prepared for them that love Him. Wow. We got a brief description. And boy, I'll tell you, we start singing about heaven and open our eyes to see Him and going there, and you long for it. You long for it. But we're down in chapter 21, verse 23, 24, through the rest of the chapter. And our main verse that I want to look at, and the nations, in verse 24. The nations of them which are saved. The nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of the city. And the kings of these nations will bring glory and honor into the city. The gates will never be shut. There's no night there. The Lamb is the light. His glory illuminates it. It's hard for our mind and our human faculty to be able to comprehend. It's hard to put it into a mental picture because we've never seen anything like it. We've never, other than the description given, we've never seen anything like it. Eye has never seen the things that God has prepared to them that love Him. Now, nations and kings exist in eternity. I don't often refer back to commentaries anymore because they either don't write on difficult passages, or they say things that's completely off the wall. I don't say that because I'm somebody that's greatly spiritual, greatly intellectual. I'll just say they're of very little benefit. They're of very little, if any, benefit. I study, if I study, to see what a man will say. Three older theologians that lived back in the 1800s, near the 19th century. One of them, his name was Albert Barnes. Another, his name was Clark. Another was Gill. Those three, I kind of look and see what they have to say. I was absolutely breathtaking when I looked on my Bible study that I have on the computer. Barnes said concerning verse 24, and I quote Barnes. Barnes says, it's imaginary. Clark said it's an illusion. That's what he said. Clark, one of the greatest theologians of his day, said, when you read verse 24, it's an illusion. Barnes, one of the greatest, and wrote a whole commentary on the entire Old and New Testament. I had those. I left them in Romania. Albert Barnes said it's imaginary. I was brokenhearted. I was just absolutely brokenhearted. I just shut the computer off and said, what a waste of time. Imaginary illusion. Two of the greatest, in my opinion. There's dozens and dozens of others. Kyle Dietz and others, great theologians. That's what you find. That's what you find. And it's disheartening. We were taught in Bible college, you always take things literal unless it has symbolic language. And there is a lot of symbolisms. But there's no symbolic language in these verses. There is no symbolic language. There is no imaginary illusion. I just brokenhearted. I just shut the computer off. Now, the word saved can mean physical salvation as well as spiritual salvation. It's the same word as death, like death. Death can mean spiritual death, or death can mean physical death. Only one word, but it can mean spiritual or physical. That's the same word with saved as salvation. It means preservation. God, on a morning in 1976 or 77, preserved my life physically when I was electrocuted. Had He not, I'd been in hell. He allowed me to live so that He could save me spiritually on July the 3rd, 1978. I had a physical preservation, and then I had a spiritual preservation, and that's all contributed to one word, grace. Grace. Because I certainly did not deserve. I said this morning, I was nothing but a piece of trash laying alongside the road, and God came along and picked it up. Nobody else wanted it. So that word saved, there's no such thing as national salvation. Salvation has always been personal. Now there will be national repentance. There will be a national repentance. But there is not anything known as a national salvation. Salvation from the time of Adam has been a personal salvation. It's been a personal decision between the heart of man and the heart of God. It's always been by faith, all the way back to Abel, and down through to the present. Always been by faith. And so, this is not talking about nations being spiritually saved or preserved. It has to do with physically being preserved nations. Now, we will look at some Old Testament verses. If you turn back with me now, we read it, there it is. That's not an illusion. Has nothing to do with an illusion. You cannot describe it as imaginary in no terms. No terms. Now, let's go back to the book of Genesis and learn a principle. Book of Genesis, chapter 11. This is after the flood, approximately 200 years that had taken place. Chapter 11. Book of Genesis. The whole earth was of one language. Any nation has its own language. Any nation has its own land. If you can be a nation and not have a land, you can lose your land. You can lose your land and still be a nation. Race. Nation means race. But you have to have a land, you have to have a language, and you are known somehow through history where you are traced back to a certain race originated from. And most countries that's in their right mind have a flag that they honor. Some of these stars, big stars in the sports field, ought to be kicked out of the country when they say, "I won't play. I won't play" if they play the national anthem. "I will not stand" when they play the salute to the flag. They ought to be loaded up and taken out of here immediately. No questions asked. I know we have a right. I know we have a right, but you don't have a right to be wrong. We have a right, but we don't have a right to be wrong. All of one language. There was no nations before the flood. And for over 200 years, 250 years after the flood, there was no nations. No nations. None. Then at the Tower of Babel, God gave the languages. And languages developed race. And languages developed identity of people. And then they began to scatter in verse 9 of chapter 11. They began to scatter upon all the face of the earth. And that began the nations. A language. Now they scatter upon the face of the earth. They all go to their dwelling and their land. And they begin to populate. And nations is born. There are many times the word nations, plurality, are used. Now learn this principle. Whenever the word nations is in the plurality, it's always Gentile. Because there were many. When the word nation is used in the singular, it only means one nation, and that's Israel. Because there was only one Israel. That's a principle. Anytime the scripture speaks of nations, plurality, that's Gentile, because there were many Gentile nations. But when you find the word nation singular, it's always referring to the Jewish nation because there's only been one Jewish nation and it's always referred to in the singular. So in chapter 11 you had the beginning of nations and in chapter 12 you had the beginning of a nation. And that's what it's been all about since that period of time. Nations. And a nation. Nations and a nation. And in the nation, beginning with Abraham in chapter 12, of course he was the patriarch, Isaac, Jacob. They actually formed as a nation and population in Egypt under Pharaoh and the Egyptians. That's where they multiplied into over 2 million was estimated when they come out of there. And they had a language. I can't wait to get to heaven and ask the Lord, what was the language they spoke before you gave languages? Boy, you want to get into the realms of the theological halls of the cemeteries and listen to them explain which language was spoken before language was given. What language was spoken for the first 1600 years? Oh boy, I've heard it. Believe me, I've heard it. I don't know, but I can't wait to find out. I don't know what language it was. Paul heard a language that he was forbidden to repeat. Yeah. Now, in chapter 12, I want to read here a few verses. I'm doing a little bit explanatory. Then we're going to do a little exploratory. Chapter 12, now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land. Now there it is. In Deuteronomy, we showed this several months ago, the land belongs to God. That wee little tiny piece of land called the Holy Land, there's nothing holy about it, bloodshed from one end to the other over the centuries and millenniums. God said, that land's mine, and I've given it to you as a possession. That's what he told them in Deuteronomy. Unto a land. You see, if people have to have a land, that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation. There it is. Languages, plurality. Nations, plurality in chapter 11. Nation, singularity in chapter 12. That principle runs through the entire Bible because there was only one Jewish nation while there was dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of Gentile nations down through the ages of mankind. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great. Thou shalt be a blessing. Now remember, God took Abraham out of a total pagan society. Even the fathers, and that's very generic, even the fathers served false gods. Clearly reported by Joshua. The fathers on the other side of the flood, who all that involved, we do not know. But there was not anyone down in that Mesopotamia valley, not any of them, worshiping the true God. The true God who brought the flood upon the earth, revealed himself to Abraham, made promises to Abraham. Abraham believed God, and God gave him righteousness because Abraham believed him. One man before the flood, Noah. One man after the flood, Abraham. I will bless them that bless thee, curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families. That's another characteristic of a nation. Any society has to have families. That involves a husband and a wife. May I make that more clear? A female and a male. With children. Unless they cannot have. Plenty to adopt. That makes families. A male and a female. That's the way God intended it. And that's the way God established it. And then they have children. That's how societies are built. That's how nations are grown to a populous people. Families. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Indeed. And that is speaking, of course, of the blessing that would come. And that blessing was passed on to to Isaac, and from Isaac it was passed on to Jacob, and Jacob passed them on over to Judah. Judah got it, and then from Judah came the kings, and the kings came David, and down through the tribe of David and the genealogy of David came Christ. Spiritual blessing. And it would come through Abraham, through the nation of the Jew. That's why the Jewish nation has been so hated down through the time, down through the centuries, the millennia. The Jews have been hated because they're the people of God. They're the chosen people of God. Called out of a total pagan after the flood, living 200 to 250 years after the judgment of God. And we saw on Wednesday night, they knew the truth, they knew the Godhead, they knew the judgment of God, they knew everything about it. They refused to recognize Him as God, they refused to recognize the Godhead, and knew the truth and suppressed it and changed it and led the entire society into a godless, immoral society. And Paul lists in chapter 1, the closing, the immoral decline, the spiral of decline of humanity after what that generation after the flood did. God reached straight down in the midst of that and pulled a man up out of there by the name of Abraham and began a nation. At the same time, nations were being began with languages. They have their languages now. God gave them. They got land. They scattered, nations formed, names began to take place. And Abraham took on the name from one of his ancestors, and one of his ancestors in the line of Shem was called Eber, E-B-E-R, Eber. And from that became Abraham the Hebrew. He was a Syrian, and so was his wife. They were Syrians. And down in that mess, that hodgepodge, that's his genealogy, that's where it was traced back to. Is one of the prophets tracing back there. Now, so you got the beginning of nations and you got the beginning of a nation. And there's to be a report and a record kept on the relationship between the nations and a nation. And the singular nation was to reach the pagan nations that came out of that Ur of the Chaldees. They were to reach them. They didn't do a very good job. But that's kind of what we read last Sunday night in closing from Matthew chapter 25. There is the judgment called the judgment of the sheep and goat nations. Barnes never mentioned it. Clark never mentioned it. Gill never mentioned it. The sheep nation, it was clear, and we don't have the time to go back there and reread that again tonight in Matthew chapter 25, but he said to the sheep nations, enter into eternity, blessed art thou, and so forth. When you saw me, I was hungry. When you saw me, I was thirsty. When I needed clothes, you clothed me, and so forth. And enter into eternal rest, into Not any of these three men that I greatly admired ever alluded to that and called it an illusion. There's going to be a judgment of nations. We read about it, if you'll remember, last Sunday night in closing from Matthew chapter 25. And it's the judgment of nations. And there's the sheep nations and the goat nations. And the goat nations are those that will be destroyed and completely annihilated at the return of Christ. That happens at the return of Christ. Now, here's where we get into complications. And boy, they can be complicated. When Jesus comes back, and we studied it, He sets up and fulfills many of the prophetic promises that was made to the line of David and reiterated to Mary when Gabriel came and announced the birth of Christ. He shall sit upon the throne of his father David. And we studied the millennial kingdom. And I'm saying, when I have an opinion, I'm giving you my opinion. I can't take you to a Bible verse. But that judgment of nations is not into the eternity. That judgment of nations is to enter into the millennial kingdom. And it has a lot to do with nations in their relationship to the nation. I will bless them that bless thee. I'll curse them that curse thee. And nations that have been favorable, believe it or not, but Nebuchadnezzar, when he found out who the true God was, made a proclamation, if we find anybody worshiping any other god except the God of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his head will be taken off and his house burnt down. And all his family. There's only one God. And he's the God of Daniel. And he sent that proclamation over 127 different provinces that he ruled over. Yes. Nebuchadnezzar. And God called him my servant. And then the Medo-Persian Empire. And here come along Cyrus. And then followed by Darius, and then can't get it out. Artaxerxes. Thank you. Artaxerxes. Thirdly, they were all favorable to the Jews. They all allowed the Jews after the 70-year captivity to go back and rebuild and gave them letters of protection and letters of provision and take it out of the timber out of the king's forest, and everything was provided by the Gentile kings that kept them in captivity now are blessing them and helping them rebuild their nation. You say, are they a goat or a sheep? I don't know. I'm not God. But I will say this. I believe that the judgment of nations, which is called the sheep and goat, is a determination of what nations will be permitted to enter into the millennial reign of Christ for 1,000 years. And there's going to be people born physically during that 1,000-year reign of Christ. Because there will be people come out of the tribulation period physically that survived it. And the only one word we've got that tells us how they survived it in Matthew 24 was they endured. How, we don't know. And there's no need of speculating. But there will be people that will come out of the tribulation period. They're not saved. They're just humanity, and they're ushered and taken into, and I believe they're associated with nations that have been somewhat, or some type of a background, that they've been somewhat favorable to the nation of Israel. Here's the problem with the prophetic. Many times the prophecies, and the prophet that's prophesying may be prophesying in a passage, let's say 10 verses. He may be in the past in one verse. He may be in the future in the next verse. He may be in the present in the next verse. And on top of that, they have double application. They apply it to present time with a double application of an event in the future. And boy, that's hard to get that all sorted out. What is the prophet talking about? Is he talking about now? Is he talking about the future? Is he talking about the past? It's very difficult. And boy, you're talking about the theological halls of the cemeteries. And I want to tell you, boy, they go round and round and round. We're not going to try that. No point. Now, after, I believe the sheep nations are the nations that will be permitted to enter into the millennial reign of Christ. But humanity will grow. People are going to repopulate. An age of human life will, according to the prophets, be back to where it was before the flood, because we're going to go back. The earth's curse is going to be lifted, and life is going to be extended to almost 1,000 years. Man will live like he did before the flood. 900. Can you imagine? Can you imagine living that long? Oh my! It shortened up real quick after the flood, because things changed. Things changed. Now, after the millennial reign of Christ, I want to show you something. After the millennial reign of Christ is over, and remember, during the millennial reign of Christ, and we're going to read a little bit of it here in a minute, I hope we don't get out of time right here. During the millennial reign of Christ, the prophet Zechariah spoke about the nations of the land and how some would come up to worship the king and others would not. We read it several months ago, maybe a year ago. But anyway, we read it in Zechariah. We're going to refresh our memory here in just a moment. Before we go there, I want to show you something that happens immediately after the millennial kingdom. Now, turn back with me again, if you will, to the book of Revelation, chapter number 20. And we read this verse as well. Remember, at the beginning of chapter 20, Satan is bound and shut up. You know this last rocket ship that went up in the air with two men in it? You know the name of it? Anybody hear the name of that ship? Did they hear it? The Beast. It's called the Beast. I about fell out of my chair when they said they decided to name this rocket ship the Beast. I said, oh my goodness. That's what Revelation says. The Beast. Oh boy. We're closer than you think, my friends. But anyway, back to the Bible here in Revelation 20. Satan is locked up. He's chained up during the 1,000-year reign. Now, verse 7, chapter 20, verse 7. When the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations. How can we say this is an illusion? How can we say this is imaginary? This is immediately after the millennial reign of Christ, between the millennial reign of Christ and eternity, where you find nations coming out of the millennial reign that get deceived. And then in chapter 21, you find nations in eternity. We're going to explain it with the prophets in a moment. We're going to do our best. And to go out and deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, both of them are identified with Russian descent. Also in Ezekiel they're mentioned. To gather them together to battle, the number who is as the sand of the sea. You ever try to go out on the seashore and number all the pebbles of sand? Impossible. Now, can you believe that? Here are nations that have just experienced life with no earth curse. Nope, the earth curse has been lifted. Life has been extended for almost a thousand years. There is a theocracy rule. Theocracy means God rules. The city of Jerusalem is called the Lord is there, and He'll be there, and He'll reign from there for 1,000 years. Perfect environment. The lamb and the lion will lay down together. The desert will bloom as a rose. We saw all this when we studied the millennium. Perfect earth. Perfect government. Perfect government. And it will be a perfect atmosphere. No evil. No wars. No fighting. No death. No killing. No massacres. And as soon as it's over, here comes the old slewfoot. And can you believe that these nations can be deceived so quickly? To follow Him and attempt to overthrow us. The fight is not against the Lord, because people can't fight God. They can't get to Him, so they fight against His people. Cain was angry at God, but he couldn't get to God, so he got the best thing he could. He killed his brother. Yeah. They went up, in verse 9, they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints. See, they can't get to God. So who do they take on? They take on us. About the beloved city, far condemned from heaven, from God out of heaven, and devoured them. That didn't take long. Now we are in our glorified bodies. They can't destroy us. You know how powerful and deceptive the devil is? After bringing these nations through this perfect 1,000 years of life on this earth, renovated, curse lifted, life extended to what it was before the flood, and so easily they turn against the Lord and His saints. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And fire comes down out of heaven and destroys them. But not all nations are deceived. And that's where we've got to go back to the prophets. Because not all nations. I believe that the judgment of the nations in Matthew 25 are to determine which nations go into the millennium. Into the millennium. That's the judgment of nations. And it's been a lot upon their treatment toward Israel. And having a heart to help people. Good government is to help people. Romans chapter 13. Good government doesn't cause people to fear them. Good government provides a society that people can enjoy, not live in fear. That's Romans chapter 13. But not all nations are deceived. Now, everybody with me so far? I've been a lot. I hesitate going over into this, but I don't want to leave you hanging until next week. Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14. The last chapter. There was the beginning of nations, plurality. They were called Gentiles. There was the beginning of a nation, the next chapter. That was the Jew. After the flood, 1,600 years, perhaps 1,700 years, there was only one language, one people, no nations. But after the flood, the Tower of Babel. Nations began, plurality. Those are Gentiles. A nation, that's singularity, that's the Jew. And God was looking at the relationship between the two. And many times, as the captivity, God would use the Gentiles to discipline his own people. He would stir up the Gentiles against them. And sometimes he used Nebuchadnezzar and Cyrus and those men, he would use them to help his people. And you can't tonight go back into the historical part of ever since Genesis 11 and figure out what nations are preserved, what nations... you can't do that. You can't put a name on it, period. It's impossible. Now here's what happens during the millennial. Chapter 14, verse 16, it came to pass, everyone that is left of the nations which came against Jerusalem. There it is. I'm not going to have time to explain this tonight because it's almost 7 o'clock right now. I was planning on finishing this tonight, getting chapter 22 next Sunday night. That's not going to happen. It shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all of the nations which came against Jerusalem. Now remember the prophets. That could be in the past. It's got even past tense lingo. It could be in the future. In the past, picturing the future. Could be in the present. We're going to explain it next Sunday night. I just don't have the time. Notice the word left. Nations, everyone that is left, which came against Jerusalem, shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be, now, verse 16 could be the judgment of nations in Matthew 25. That's what it could be. And determining which nations go into the millennial kingdom and which nations are destroyed in Matthew chapter 25. Because there are nations destroyed in chapter 25. The goat nations are destroyed at that point. And the sheep nations are permitted to enter in. So chapter 14 verse 16 could be the judgment of nations. And it shall be that whosoever will not come up, and this is during the millennium, it shall come to pass that whosoever will not come up of all the families of the earth, see, families make nations, of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. Going to get no rain. I want to tell you, if you can get a rain for 1,000 years, you'd be pretty dry. And if the family of Egypt, scenario suggestions, if the family of Egypt go not up and come not, they have no rain. And there shall be the plague wherewith the Lord shall smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. That is during the millennium. This is what he's talking about down here, coming to worship. That's during the 1,000-year reign. Verse 16, I believe, is the judgment of those nations that are allowed to enter into. But what I want you to notice is there's going to be people and nations and families during the time of the millennium that absolutely refuse to go up to worship the King. That's probably enough confusion for tonight. Because, boy, it gets more complicated. To try to figure out, and we're not going to name nations. We're not going to name America. Or we're not going to name any other nations. We referred to a few, like Iraq, modern-day Iraq, Babylon, past, the Medo-Persian, modern-day Iran. But we're not going to attempt to put any nations in the goat, any nations into the sheep. We're not going to attempt to put any nations that was deceived and followed Satan after the millennial reign. And we're not going to try to put any identity of nations that enter into eternity. We're just going to see what God says and leave it go at that. But we're not putting any identity on it. Anybody got any questions? You want something cleared up before you go home? Now, we've got an extensive passage in Isaiah for next Wednesday night. I still got more to teach here. I still got the rest of this passage to teach in Zechariah. But we'll have to finish it next Sunday night. Okay? All right. At this point, we will sign off from our Facebook friends. We thank you for connecting with us on this Sunday evening. We will be back streaming live on Wednesday night. We may not be right at 6:15. We have a time of prayer before we have the Bible study. And that's very important. And sometimes our prayer meeting goes longer, sometimes it's shorter, so we're not going to say a specific time. But it'll be sometime 6:15 to 6:30, somewhere in that area between that time. People were looking for us last week and couldn't find us because we weren't on at 7:15, I'm sorry. 7:15, not 6:15. 7:15. Anywhere from 7:15 to 7:30, we will be connecting. So just be patient. We will be on. We've got a lot of new people that are finding us, and this thing is taking off like wildfire. And we're so thankful for you connecting with us tonight. Stay safe, stay blessed, and we will see you back here again on Wednesday evening. So we'll be disconnecting at this time. All right. Thank you for coming out. This old tired preacher is tired. I taught Sunday school, and I enjoyed it for Frosty this morning. I enjoyed teaching Sunday school. I don't say this to get a pat on the back or to get any acknowledgement or any rewards or anything. I just say, when I was in Romania in my early years over there, I preached 7 times a day. 7 times a Sunday. Never stopped to take a rest. Never stopped to eat. You get done in one church, they'd be there with a car, they'd throw you in the car and run over about 10, 15 miles to another church. They'd have their singing preliminaries done. You stand up and preach, they'd take you out, throw you in the car, off you go again. Do that all day long, every Sunday. Preach 7 times. Start about 9 o'clock in the morning and get home about midnight. And then get up the next morning about 6 and get ready for chapel at the college. Preaching chapel. I couldn't do that anymore. Man, oh man, I couldn't do that anymore. I'm just thank God I have the health that I can do what I am doing. And I'm so thankful for that. Been a good day to be in the house of the Lord. Been a good day. And we thank you for being here. And we just pray that God will take His word and use it for His honor and for His glory. Amen? All right, if you get a chance, and I'm going to try to this week to slip over and see Virginia. If you get a chance, go over and stop by and see her. Things must be getting better. They let Bill out. And